Welcome back to Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. The next 3 months will be a flurry of debate over HB 477. The open records restrictions have been derided by the Society of Professional Journalists as turning Utah into a black hole when it comes to transparency. Its supporters, however, say there needs to be a balance between transparency and privacy, and this is a step in the right direction. In our first segment on the new law today, we start by getting the perspective of a state lawmaker who passed the bill to find out why he feels it was needed and how the process will move ahead for this bill to be amended. Joining us on the phone this morning is Senate Majority Leader Scott Jenkins. Senator, thanks for being part of the discussion today.
You bet, Jeff. Glad to be here.
It's great to have you. Senator, this bill was criticized heavily, not just for what's in it, but also how quickly it was debated and passed by lawmakers. When did the Senate Majority Leadership start talking about this bill?
Well, we started talking about it a couple days before we realized that when we realized it was coming from the House. And we actually decided that we were going to slow the process down a little. And if you remember, in the House or in the Senate, we actually had a hearing on it. So we referred the bill back to Rules, and we made the Rules have a public hearing before it went to our body, just to make sure that it in fact had some transparency.
Did you personally get a chance to read and feel like you thoroughly understood the legislation?
Well, I did have a chance to read it. You know, I guess you could debate whether I thoroughly understood it. A lot of people think we're crazy up there, so that's debatable. I thought I understood it, yes.
So when the bill passed the first time around, do you feel like the discussion that took place was enough, or were you glad to see it recalled?
Well, I wasn't disappointed to see it recalled and have an extension put in it. You know, these are pretty big changes, some of them that are in there, and I think it's important to vet this kind of stuff. I don't have any problem with the public watching every movement we make, frankly, so I didn't have a problem at all putting the delayed date in there, and the governor's thought of giving us a little bit of the first part of the summer to look at this, and his commitment to, if we decide we want to change it, to hold a special session to do it.
To your knowledge, Senator, were there any meetings either in the House or the Senate side that occurred with the media outlets and the citizen groups before the bill passed?
Not to my knowledge, but, you know, you'd have to ask John Duglin about that. I was involved in construction law up there, and it was just absolutely all-consuming to me prior to this. So whether or not he held any meetings with any media outlets, I really don't know. I wasn't privy to that.
Okay, well, we did try to get him on the phone this morning, but weren't successful in that effort. So, Senator Jenkins, the plan is to amend this bill in a special session. Why did lawmakers decide, do you think, to pass the bill, then change it, instead of waiting and then changing the bill in the meantime, then passing the bill later?
Well, there's no question the reason was because the governor come to us and said, look, I want to look at this a little longer. And it was the governor's efforts that came back to us and said, look, I'll commit to hold a special session if you guys will commit to bringing it back and giving us a few months to look at this. So I don't know what pressures came to bear on the governor. You'd have to ask him that. But when he contacted us, we agreed. There wasn't a problem with that. We try to get along up there best we can. And so when he requested that, we felt like it was okay. So we, in fact, did it.
But why not just say, let's not pass the bill at all? Instead, we'll just revise it over the next year, and then maybe we'll consider it in 2012.
Oh, that was an option. There's no question that was an option. It just wasn't one that, was thought of seriously. I mean, the people who wrote the bill and were pushing it through, you know, Representative Dougal, and I'm sitting here looking at it right now. There was 50-some-odd sponsors in the House, so,
right.
You know, those guys were pushing it.
Right. So it sounds like you're saying that the House was much more supportive of this bill, much more behind it than perhaps the Senate was?
Yeah, I think that'd be fair. I don't know if I'd say more supportive, but certainly they had a list of co-sponsors that were pushing it, and we didn't. So that'd probably be fair to say.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. Our guest is Utah Senate Majority Leader Scott Jenkins, talking about HB 477, the controversial amendments to Utah's Government Records and Access and Management Access Law, or GRAMA. One of the main concerns in this debate, Senator Jenkins, is private information. That's been one of the impetus for passing this legislation. Media outlets have argued that private information is already not subject to disclosure under current law, so they don't feel that there's a need to change it. Where do you fall on that debate?
Well, I have felt like that is one of the main reasons that this bill came about. You know, when you start looking at the bill and it talks about texting and text messages, which didn't exist 20 years ago, and tweets and all these new forms of electronic communication, then you start saying to yourself, well, okay, number one, do we have the ability to even collect it? And if we do, really the decision needs to be made of what is private and what isn't private. And, you know, this really goes back to a core principle, and it's a really, rather than to argue the individual parts of it, you really need to argue the principle, and that is, when a person is a legislator or a city councilman or a mayor or a county commissioner, what right to privacy do they have? And that's really the core of this. That is what needs to be discussed. You know, is do we have a right to privacy or don't we? And if we do, what part of our life is private? What part of our life isn't private? Do you get to share in my tweets with my wife and my children's, or do you not get to share in those? Do we have to go in there and decide what is government-related and what isn't? Because right now, that's exactly what happens. These are private, and then under the new bill, and if you contest it, then there's a board that goes in there and looks at them and determines what is private and what is not, and how they can come forward and bring these records forward. You know, and I guess this really goes to the basis, to the core of this, is, you know, I want to believe that most government officials are honest and are down here doing what they're supposed to do. Others want to believe that they're dishonest and they're not doing what they want to do, and the fact that we have to look at every aspect of their life. And that's really where the debate comes on this.
What about the fact that this bill, though, simply bans all text messages and voicemails, period? It doesn't say only private text messages and voicemails, literally every single one of them. If all we're doing is trying to protect private information, why should we ban all of them?
Well, it does ban them, but it also says in there that you have the ability to go in there and determine if any of these have relevancy, and you can pull those back. So you're right. There's a compromise in there that we drafted into it, and whether you not believe that compromise is enough or not is really debatable. Well, I'm sitting here reading at it when it talks about these records, and it talks about voicemails and instant messages and videos and chats and text messages and notes prepared by an employee or an officer of a government. You know, it goes down each and every one of those, an oral or written or video communication. You know, it gets to the point where you say to yourself, well, then how can I communicate as a legislator? What do you want me to do? And this really comes to that because, you know, we try to observe the law as legislators. And so we're trying to draw clear lines here. And you're right. When you say, well, why this or why that? That is the debate right now, is why these specific items. And the fact of the matter is, if you say, well, my emails are not private, well, then I'll probably stop emailing or start tweeting. If you say my tweets are not private, well, then I'll start making phone calls. Because I, as an individual, I feel like I got to have some privacy.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. We're talking with Utah Senate Majority Leader Scott Jenkins about HB 477 and open records. Senator, I'm curious if you've ever been the subject of a grandma request yourself, and if so, what that experience was like.
I have. We got grandmaed 12 times this year as a legislature, and the last couple involved me. And, you know, basically our attorneys come on the floor or, you know, contact us and say, okay, don't touch any of your emails, don't touch any of your records. We're going to be in them in the next couple of days. And they get in, record them all, and then they go and sift through them and release anything that's relevant. And so they just freeze everything. But, you know, this gets to be pretty painstaking sometimes, depending on what it is you do. For example, the city of Alpine received a grandma request several years ago that took them 6 years to fulfill. It was 250,000 pages of documents. Well, that's really tough. Other cities like West Valley City, you know, they had one that just took them 3 months. But it was thousands of pages of documents. So there's got to be a balance here when you say to yourself, okay, on one hand, these are public documents. We have the right to view them, and I absolutely agree with that. But if somebody's just on a fishing trip here, there's got to be some kind of request or some kind of expense to it, because it is costing us so much to comply with this. We have to send people, well, through all our archives and all these records to look and to search for this documentation. And believe me, I do not want to cut the public off. It's absolutely essential that they have access to what it is we're doing, especially in all of our official responsibilities. They have to have that access. And, you know, as a legislature, we've gone, what I feel, the extra mile to allow them transparency. The last few years, we've opened up all kind of our budgets and other records to make it even easier for people to get in and sift through what we're doing.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. Senator Jenkins, what do you think about the fact that, you know, even the leader of the Utah Tea Party is calling for the repeal of this legislation? There really does seem to be a pretty broad coalition for this bill to be repealed.
Sure, and I can't knock that. I wonder if everybody understands the extent to which this goes, what it is we're doing. But, you know, I feel comfortable now with what we've done with the governor to say, look, we're going to set the enactment date back a few more months. We're going to hold some hearings before everybody gets too energized. I think we'll go through those hearings and decide if we've gone too far. And frankly, there's a few things in here, a few little fixes I'd like to put in here too, possibly. And I hope I have something to do with this, these rehearings on this.
Do any particular items that you'd like to fix come to mind right now?
Well, it's certainly important that we put a little stronger definition into a record that relates to the performance of a legislator's official government duties.
Right.
You know, that seems to be where the big angst is right now. And I think the definition that's involved in there needs to be tightened up a little. You know, right now it says anything that is prepared, received, or retained by the legislator. And so, you know, if I happen to have a note that I've created on a bill and stuck it to it on my desk, right now, under the new law, that's protected, that note is, that I've retained. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there is a debate whether or not that note should be protected that I wrote on.
What about communication between lawmakers or other elected officials and their staff members? Do you think there's a fair argument that all communication between staffers and legislators should be considered of a public record and not personal information?
Well, you know, we have on the front end of a bill, when you're trying to draft a bill and you're trying to decide what to do with it, mm-hmm. sometimes you become creative, you know, and you're going through there and you're trying to decide what makes sense to do and what doesn't make sense to do. And so you throw a lot of things around. And, you know, of course, the sentiment of the people who drafted this bill, there's no question about it. They were saying, look, while we're in that discovery mode of trying to find out what's proper and what isn't, we think those specific items should be protected.
Is that the same kind of rationale that the Senate GOP keeps its caucus meetings closed to the public?
Well, there's no question that when we close our meetings, we do it so that we can have very robust discussions. There's no question. When we sit and compare the Senate with the House, in fact, opens their caucuses.
Right.
And they're all careful about what they say, and they don't want to offend anybody. And the debate goes on whether or not that is good or not. We believe in the Senate that we need a period of time when we can meet by ourselves, secluded, and talk about things openly. And that's what we do. The law allows us to do it, and so we do it. And we like it, and we find it very functional, and we find it accepted. And we allow people to come in and listen to what we talk about up to a point, and then we close our caucus, and then we talk about the specific issues that we're having a hard time getting along on. And we talk about the upsides and the downsides, and we feel like we like that the closeness of it, the fact that we can frankly discuss things without being portrayed as idiots, or you know, I mean, you know, frankly, that's it. We like to talk about these things, and we talk about them quite openly.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, some of us are very frank in our discussion, and it gets that way in there sometimes, and that's the way we like it. We like that.
Let me ask you about two more things before we let you go, Senator Jenkins. One is this idea of the burden of proof. One of the biggest complaints about this bill is that it shifts the burden of proof from the government to the public as to whether a record should be protected. Don't you think perhaps the burden should be on the government to argue why it should be kept private versus the burden on the average citizen to argue why it should be released?
What you're going after there, or what you're thinking, but you've got to understand that I, as a legislator, and this really comes down to the core of it. This is the principle that needs to be debated. Do I have any right to keep my documentation private in regards to the bills and the things I'm doing? And when is that line crossed? And that's the big debate right now. Is you say, well, okay, we think you're hiding something, so we think you ought to be forced to disclose absolutely everything you do. Well, once we reach a certain point in time, I agree with that. I think once the bills are made public and, you know, we get them to that point, I really don't have too much of a problem with that. But you're right. That's where the whole debate comes on this.
And finally, let's talk about the fees as well, Senator Jenkins. Another big complaint is that, well, if you make the fees too steep, your average citizen will not be able to access the records, but, you know, really rich people, I suppose, might be able to. Could you come up with a compromise where, say, you know, the first 50 pages of a record or something like that are free, but beyond that you have to pay a certain amount? Can we reach some common ground here?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's very possible. You know, I don't think there's that much of a complaint about the small grandma request. It's when somebody comes in and wants, like in Alta, 250,000 pages. You know, they told us that that cost them $37,000 to comply with that. West Valley told us that it cost him $30,000 to comply. So I do absolutely agree with you. I think that there's a level of compromise there where we could say, gee, you know, give a guy 100 pages or give a guy 200 pages or 2 or 3 hours. Yes.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. Our guest has been Scott Jenkins, the Majority Leader of the Utah Senate. Senator Jenkins, we appreciate your time very much.
Thank you very much. It's nice being with you.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. We'll be right back.
I'm Tom Asbrook of On Point. KCPW works hard to keep listeners connected to the Salt Lake City community. Whether it's through the station's political debate series or coverage of the Utah legislature, KCPW puts this community in touch with the people making decisions that directly affect you. It's radio that makes a difference. Support KCPW by pledging during the upcoming membership drive or go to kcpw.org to make a pledge today. And thanks.
Welcome back to Politics Up Close on KCPW. I'm Jeff Robinson. We continue now our discussion on HB 477 this morning. A referendum has been filed to have the extremely divisive open records restriction bill repealed, and that would be a delight to my next two guests. Joining us on the phone this morning is Jeff Hunt, attorney for the Utah Media Coalition, who has literally been involved in the Utah public records debate for decades. Jeff, Oh, looks like we're going to have to dial Jeff again. We apologize. Joining us in the studio is Sherilyn Binion. She's the co-legislative director for the Utah League of Women Voters, which has very deep concerns about the legislation. Sherilyn, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, and we're working to get Jeff Hunt with the Utah Media Coalition on the line. But Sherilyn, let's start with you. When did the League of Women Voters first learn that this bill was being drafted and could be passed by the legislature?
We learned of the bill on a Wednesday morning after its contents had first officially been disclosed on Tuesday evening, I believe. This was before it was heard by the House on Thursday and by the Senate on Friday and passed by both those bodies.
And so at any point during that discussion, did you get to testify? I know the House, I don't think, literally had a single public hearing, but the Senate had one. Any opportunity whatsoever to talk about it?
The House actually did have a committee hearing on Wednesday afternoon, and I and several others testified at that, all of us in opposition to passage of this bill. And then there was no committee hearing scheduled for the Senate, but the Senate, after people began to realize what was happening and protest, scheduled an extra Rules Committee hearing at which a few more people were allowed to testify, all in opposition to the bill.
Now we're joined on the line by Jeff Hunt, attorney for the Utah Media Coalition, who has been involved in the Utah public records debate for a long time. Jeff, it's good to have you.
Good to be here.
Jeff, I want to start by asking you about the process that occurred when GRAMA, the Government Records and Access and Management Act, was originally passed 20 years ago. How were you involved in that discussion when the legislature first looked at opening up Utah's records to the public?
Well, it was a carefully constructed process where they gathered all the stakeholders in the issue. So you had members of the public, media representatives, local and state government representatives, and business interests that were represented on a committee that met a period of several months and drafted the law. And then after they drafted it, they delayed the implementation for a period of a year. And at that point, I was involved in drafting portions of the statute that that needed to be revised. So the law as enacted was the product of this carefully constructed public process that involved all the relevant perspectives from the stakeholders.
And the second time around, I would imagine you feel it was just the opposite.
Well, there wasn't any process. It was unveiled on the very last day that you could have a committee hearing, and it was rammed through in 72 hours. And clearly, it was designed that way so that the public could not have any meaningful input into the process. And I think that the people that allowed that to happen are recognizing now that it was a serious mistake, that this is not a media statute. This is the public statute. It's a fundamental structural law that governs the relationship between the people and its government. And you just can't do the kind of damage that was done to it without the people being very, very upset and saying, no, we're not going to take that.
When that original GRAMA law passed, Jeff, was there an understanding back at that time that perhaps this was only the start and that it would be revisited down the road? Or did you come away from that discussion feeling like this is a good law, it represents everybody's interest, and we should not revisit it in the future?
Oh, I think all laws are revisited in the future, and GRAMA's no exception. I think we all understood that that there would be amendments and changes in the law, and there have been. Every single year, for the last 20 years or so, there have been changes to GRAMA. But it has always been with not major structural changes and not doing violence to the fundamental principles of the statute. And that's what's so different about this bill. It really does violence to the fundamental principles that underlie Graham, and those are presumption of public access to the public's records, mm-hmm. keeping the cost at as low as possible in response to the actual cost of the request, and having, you know, the exceptions be narrowly drawn as provided by the legislative intent section of the statute. So there's this balance that the statute has between public access and protecting legitimate privacy interests and governmental interests. And the reason people are so upset about this statute, or the law that was passed, is mm-hmm. fundamentally upsets that balance.
This is Politics Up Close on KCPW. We're speaking with media attorney Jeff Hunt and Sherilyn Binion, co-legislative director for the Utah League of Women Voters. And Sherilyn, Jeff was talking about how this is not just an anti-media bill. It's an anti-citizen bill, even though lawmakers might feel it's targeted mainly at the media. How does HB 477 interfere with the mission of your organization, the League of Women Voters?
The League of Women Voters was founded 90 years ago mm-hmm. and has always maintained an open government as a principle that is necessary to our way of life. Whether we call it, the legislature came up with constitutional compound republic or a democracy without access by citizens to the records of what the government is doing, they have no way of informing themselves and making decisions about approving or disapproving the actions that their representatives, the people who are delegated to work for them, may take.
Do you feel any sympathy, Sherilyn, for some of the arguments lawmakers have made? For example, Representative Carl Wimmer, who used to support the bill. He doesn't anymore. He wants it to be repealed.
Right.
But back when he supported the bill, he said that he once had to release an email about his brother and his brother's health concerns and how his brother eventually passed away, and he found that to be very offensive. If that is accurate, do you sympathize with that at all?
I think there certainly are instances when grammar can be abused. I think these are so rare that the isolated anecdotes that have been used in supporting
right.
the bill need to be supplanted by some hard data. And certainly that is something that the legislature did not consider.
Jeff Hunt, let's talk more about the privacy concerns. The newspapers have argued that under the current Graham law, or before HB 477, private information was already not subject to disclosure. But they've also brought up a Supreme Court case, a Utah Supreme Court case involving the Deseret News, that they claim does not protect lawmakers and other elected officials' private information. Could you clarify for us what really is the status of private information under the current Graham law, whether it's protected or not?
It is protected, and it encompasses an entire category of records in the statute called private records that are off limits to the public. And those include records the release of which would constitute an unwarranted invasion of personal privacy. That is a very flexible and protective category that is available to protect the very kinds of records that Representative Wimmer is talking about, the record disclosing personal information about his relative, that information did not need to be released. It could be properly classified as private under Graham. So I think these anecdotal stories, when you put them up to close scrutiny and light, they fall away because either there are existing protections in the statute that would cover those situations, or we have exaggerations, such as this story about the West Valley City drama request that supposedly cost $30,000. Well, we talked to the mayor of West Valley City, and he said, no, that didn't happen. What happened was there was a request, a very large request. It cost about $10,000 to respond to, and the requester paid for it. And the requester was not the news media. It was a private business that wanted the records, and it paid for the cost of that request. So I think that's an example of where, you know, the justifications for this extreme measure just don't pan out. And as to the Deseret News case, that had nothing to do with legislators' privacy. That was a case that I litigated. I represented the newspaper in that case. We litigated it for over 3 years, and that involved seeking access to a independent investigative report that was commissioned by Salt Lake County into alleged wrongdoing, sexual harassment in the workplace by a high-ranking Salt Lake County official. And that the court properly found that that was a public record. The investigation was closed. It concerned misconduct by a public official on public time with the public's money, and they found that that should properly be released. So I don't know why people would have a problem with the Deseret News case. That's a case where the Supreme Court vindicated the right of the public to get public information.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. We're talking about HB 477 with Jeff Hunt, attorney for the Utah Media Coalition, and Sherilyn Binion, co-legislative director for the Utah League of Women Voters. Jeff, since HB 477 was recalled and passed again by the legislature with an implementation date of July, since that process occurred, do you feel like there's been any additional effort on the part of lawmakers who initially rushed the bill through to reach out to yourself, to citizens groups, to the public, or do you feel like their attitude is by and large the same?
I don't think it's the same at all. I mean, I've worked with legislators for the past 15, 20 years up there, and I think most of them did not know what this bill did. I don't think they had read it. I think that they had been given an oral summary about what it did, and that oral summary was incorrect. They got bad information about what this bill did, and I think after it passed and they read it and found out what it did, that there's been a lot of it's troubled them, at least a large number of them, and they've realized that this was a mistake. They shouldn't have enacted it. And they need to fix it. And I think that fix is a repeal. I think that you don't start out, you know, talking about fixing your house by burning it down. And that's essentially what they did with the statue. So we need to go back to where the law was. And if there are specific concerns, then let's address those in a narrow fashion, not with a shotgun type approach. And while we're at it, let's find ways to improve the law to make it more accessible to the public, such as providing an appeal right for people to the State Records Committee who appeal from decisions from cities and counties and political subdivisions so they don't have to hire a lawyer and go to court to get public records.
Sherilyn Binion, do you feel as though lawmakers, especially with so many changing their mind on this bill and some even supporting a full repeal, do you feel as though lawmakers are going to have a public discussion over the next 3 months and then change the bill in this special session, which Governor Gary Herbert has promised to call, or do you feel like it's more of a show?
Originally, I think it was more about show. At this point, after the public has made its wishes clear and the activities that have taken place over the past couple of weeks, I think that the legislature may well consider seriously what needs to be done, and the League of Women Voters joins with others in maintaining that what needs to be done is repealing the bill.
It looks like we've lost Jeff Hunt again, so we'll try to get him back on the phone. We apologize for that. We're in the studio with Sherilyn Binion with the Utah League of Women Voters, of which she is the co-legislative director. Sherilyn, do you feel like your organization is prepared to suggest changes to the bill during this process, or do you feel like the only position that you can support is outright repeal?
I suppose after the board meeting of the Utah League on Saturday, we may be able to answer that more definitely. And at this point, I think there certainly are probably the answer to that is both, that we would work with the legislature in making changes, but ultimately that the real answer to the problem is to repeal the bill. I think there was a wonderful column by Joel Campbell, the BYU professor of journalism in the Tribune, that suggested that there were several things that needed to be considered as legislators addressed the possible changes. And among those was what Jeff mentioned, actually being informed about what the law contains. And I think that it's really incumbent upon everyone to know a little bit more what is in Grama and what the possible changes might be.
Jeff, let me ask you the same question I asked Sherilyn. Are you prepared to suggest specific changes to this bill, or do you feel the only position you can advocate is outright repeal?
No, I agree with Sherilyn. I think appeal is the correct way to go. I don't think you start from this statute, and I don't think anybody wants to start from where we are now. And so certainly, you know, if they have it and they have specific concerns addressed, then certainly we should address those concerns. It should be done in an open and transparent way. I think most of these concerns are already addressed in the statute and simply a matter of explaining, you know, and pointing to the provisions that provide those protections. But if those need to be tightened up or expanded, then let's do that in a careful way. And like I said, let's also look for ways to protect the public and make sure that we have the access that we need to our government and that we're not priced out of access. So I think there will be participation if it comes to that, but I think right now the public, there's the traction is for repeal, and I think that's the direction it's moving right now.
Have you been contacted yet to take part in this working group of people involved in changing the legislation? Jeff, are you still waiting for that phone call?
Still waiting for the phone call. I have not been contacted.
All right, we'll see how that plays out. Jeff, I want to go back to something that was said during the brief Senate Rules Committee hearing for this legislation. Representative Dougal, the sponsor of the bill, actually said that lawmakers have been advised under the current Grama statute to delete their emails right after they read them because they, in order to avoid having them grammaed. I'm curious to get your perspective. If lawmakers are in fact doing that, are they breaking the law right now?
Well, they are entitled to adopt their own retention schedules, as other governmental entities are. I think a retention schedule of immediate deletion is no retention schedule. That doesn't sound reasonable to me. I mean, there's really no difference in what you describe between getting a paper memorandum and immediately shredding that or burning it after you've read it. And we don't do that. So the form of the record really should not enter into this. If it's an electronic form or paper form, if it concerns the public's business, then there should be access and there should be a reasonable amount of retention time so that it has access to that. So that's troubling if that's the case, that there is immediate deletion of email concerning the public's business, because so much of what we do now is done electronically. The records are created electronically via email, text message, and we don't want to be destroying government records that way.
Sherilyn, let me ask you, earlier this week, the Society of Professional Journalists bestowed its quote-unquote award, the Black Hole Award, to the governor and the legislature for passing this legislation. Do you feel as though over the next 3 months we've got to keep the pressure on as much as possible, or are you concerned that if you go too far in criticizing the governor or the legislature, they might just say, well, all right, we're just going to keep the bill the same?
In this instance, I don't think we can go too far. It would be hard to go too far in criticizing the legislature and the governor. In fact, of course, who knows what kind of deal making went on in the process of passing the bill and getting the governor's signature. But the governor claimed that there was a veto-proof majority, mm-hmm. and so there was no point in vetoing the bill. But when the bill went back for the amendment that changed the effective date, there was not a veto-proof majority in
right.
the House. In addition to which, if the governor had waited until after the session to veto the bill, then it would have required a two-thirds vote petition of the legislators to have a special session that would try to override the veto. And I think there would certainly be a good chance by that time that public pressure would have resulted in enough legislators changing their minds so that the repeal would have happened.
And finally, Sherilyn, let me ask you about this referendum to repeal the bill. The last successful referendum in this state, obviously the voucher repeal, but it took lots of money, lots of resources mm-hmm. by a lot of people to make that happen, and considered by its supporters to be a miracle that it did happen. If the legislature does not repeal the bill, what do you think it would take to make that effort successful?
I think it would take another miracle, but we certainly have the people and the ideas and the enthusiasm in place to make something happen. And so if we can maintain the momentum, and this was something that Representative Rebecca Chavez-Houck said at one of the rallies, mm-hmm. she has seen lots of instances where people initially have a lot of enthusiasm and then over time that wanes.
Right.
And she suggested that the way to get this done, the only way to get this done, was to maintain that public enthusiasm. So that's what we're hoping for.
We've been speaking in the studio with Sherilyn Binion, the co-legislative director for the Utah League of Women Voters. Thank you so much for joining us, Sherilyn.
You're welcome. Thank you, Jeff.
And we were joined earlier on the phone by Jeff Hunt, attorney for the Utah Media Coalition.